they will continue with the last paragraph of the third section of the Upanishad. So, how the balance, understanding, vidya and avidya, one can achieve their business. So, yesterday we were discussing about how the miseries of earthly existence deserve to indirectly remind us of our incompatibility with material nature. So, Ganesh, who is actually
why is it okay? Why is it getting cut off? Cut off?
Intelligent beginning.
Not much of cut off.
Based on what we had discussed yesterday, Eklav Pro made a poem and he had sung the poem also. So why did God make this world so bad? It's a very gravely sung poem because the theme is grave, but really meaningful. Those of you who want to hear that, you can ask him about it. Yeah, I say you can perform it in the afternoon. Yeah.
Intelligent divinity generally takes note of these reminders and engages themselves in the culture of vidya or transcendental knowledge. Human life is a great opportunity for the culture of spiritual knowledge, and a human being who does not take advantage of this opportunity is called a narada, the lowest of human beings.
So guys, this is a very interesting word here. Intelligent people take note of the reminders. So the miseries are reminders. Reminders of what? Reminders of the nature of material existence. Reminders that our real shelter is beyond this material world. So the miseries are not pointless. But especially, you know, if we don't understand or accept the immortality of the soul, then the sudden deaths which happen make life entirely pointless. Somebody is living a nice, peaceful life, hoping to build a beautiful career, and then this one accident is finished. So, what would this actually serve? No, the materialistic way of life, which does not accept a reincarnation, makes no sense, because life can be just quite short at any moment. As going in the relaxed Kamala Dalajana, Jivana Dalajana, so flickery. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Vishwate nahi vishwate, kadarantho bhavishyate. Because when you take a breath in, there is no guarantee that you will take a breath outwards. So to that extent, that life will answer. So, if only when we understand the immortality of the soul, when we understand that these miseries are not just pointed sufferings, but they are pointed reminders. The reminders. Reminders that our real life is beyond us. So throughout history, thinkers and philosophers have debated and contemplated about the mystery of death. In Greek history, there were some highly materialistic people were called epicurean. So, throughout history, there are all different kinds of people. So, there were Socrates who said, you cannot kill me because you can't even see me when you are about to be poisoned. There was another epicurean philosopher who said, death will never happen to me. Because when I am, death is not there. When death is there, I will not be there. So, you words exactly like that. But ultimately, death is the event that is going to happen. And when it happens, we cannot say that it doesn't happen to me. Why? Because just as bodily disease happens to us, I cannot say that it doesn't happen to me. So, even if somebody considers that death is the termination of existence, even if we argue that there is no existence beyond death, that death is the termination of existence. But that termination also is painful. Now, why is it painful? Actually, there are three main miseries at the time of death. Sometimes, materialists will argue, you know, death is a fact that is going to come to everyone. It is going to come to devotees, it is going to come to non-devotees. So, and you say that you are going to become free from misery after death. But nobody has seen that. So, why are you being so obtuse in this pointing out that it is negative and harping on that? But we can logically explain how for a devotee the miseries of death are minimized. Now what are the miseries at the time of death? First and foremost is the misery caused by the decay and breakdown of our own body. The soul is different from the body, but as long as the soul is present in the body and the soul is attached to the body and the soul is disidentified with the body, three things. It's present in the body, is attached to the body, and is disidentified with the body. So till that time, the soul suffers whatever happens to the body as if it is happening to himself. So when a person dies and sees his maybe his hand fractured, his head cracked, his kidney stops working, and then the whole body starts paining. So it's a very stressing, horrifying experience to see the body break down in front of us, our own eyes. So the body will break down, and especially when we identify ourselves with the body, it is most horrifying because it is my existence itself in me. And even if we are not identifying ourselves, if we are attached to the body, still we suffer. Just as you know, when a small finger gets cut, we suffer. Now there is always the question, how does the soul suffer? And the soul is Achyutananda, the body is Asat Achyut Nirani. So how does the soul suffer? Does the soul suffer or does the soul not suffer? What do you think? Yes? The soul doesn't suffer. Then I can slap you, nothing will happen to you. You are not suffering.
Body is dead body can never experience. And soul, nothing happens to the soul because it can never tell the soul. Hmm. But soul identifies with the body. Whatever happens to the body is still happening to the time. And somebody gets a laptop. And you scratch the laptop in front of you, the first thing you think. That is scratch is going on, you scratch on the car, you will be pain. But you identify yourself with the laptop at some extent. So the whole period of years of life identity with the body. So you experience what is happening to the body as it happens to the body.
Yes. So this is a very important point. But actually our suffering is because of this identification. So, now, is this suffering real or is it false? Well, we can say it's false because it's not happening to the soul. But as long as we have not realized that we are not the body, for us it is real. See, many nowadays in the West and even in India, there is a form of philosophy or form of spirituality called as New Age spirituality. In this New Age spirituality, the idea is that actually spirituality is spontaneous, unrestricted experience. You don't need any rules, you don't need any discipline, you don't need to follow anybody. You just experience spirituality. So, some thinkers from India, so some Buddhists, they have pioneered this. And it is very anti-religious, anti-organizational, anti-traditional, and it is very popular. So this New Age spirituality, they say that actually everything is a state of the mind. If you think positive, you will achieve whatever you want. In fact, there was a very popular book and movie called The Secret. And what is The Secret showing? That actually your mind has enormous powers. So the whole documentary was very phony. But the idea is that some woman is standing outside a jewelry shop and she has a beautiful necklace over there, which she thinks I should have it. So here's the thing, how she concentrates and meditates on that jewelry. And the next day, if I tell you, show that the jewelry is around the neck. Similarly, somebody is a man, young man, desires a blue, very nice sports car. He observes it, concentrates, meditates, buys mental energy, the next day gets it. So the idea is, they say, if they just make your mind strong enough, you can get what you want, you can avoid what you want. And actually in the modern times, the word spiritual is very common. But they mistake mental to be spiritual. Because the Western intellectual tradition, the difference between mind and soul is not at all clear. In fact, in the Christian tradition, the difference between soul and body itself is not very clear. Because they somehow think the soul and body are connected to that. So, if the difference between soul and body is not clear, then how can they explain the difference between soul and mind to be clear? Therefore, whatever is thought of as spiritual is actually mental. They go to some very natural, scenic, peaceful place. This is so spiritual. And it's not spiritual. It's simply peaceful. So Prabhupada explains spiritual means that is connected to the soul. If there's no connection to the soul, then you cannot call it spiritual. So they say that if you just strengthen your mind and mind, then you can achieve what you want, you can avoid what you don't want. And basically, this is just the latest version of Mayavada, where you think of you are God not just in Brahman, you think you are God here also. Just you have tapped the power of the mind and you become God. But the fact of the matter is that we also say, all sufferings are because of mental perception. They are because of mental perception, but they are also factual reality. See, our mental perception can increase or decrease, can maximize or minimize our suffering. But as long as we have a body, the sufferings are a factual reality. If we grow old, and then our speed, our mobility, our efficiency goes down. Now that is not just a matter of mental perception. That is a factual reality. Because of old age, my digestive system has gone down and I am not able to digest food. I cannot say it is just a matter of mental perception. Now, mental perception is surely worse than a small problem. You know, if I have small back pain and if my mind is negative, then I have back pain will grow worse. Then maybe I will not be able to walk only. Then I will not be able to go anywhere. Then I will not be able to do anything. Then I will become like a vegetable. And then what is the use of life? Oh, I am so unfortunate. You start going on a negative thought train, then that mental condition will make our physical condition worse and will become more miserable. So it is indeed a fact that our mind state affects our body condition. And this is documented by science. As the mind body medicine is a very big field of study. In fact, one of the growing field of study in science is called psychoneuroimmunology. Immunology is the study of the immune system. There we try to increase the immune system of people so that they don't succumb to diseases. And this is psychoneuroimmunology. So neuro is related to the brain, psycho is related to the mind. So they say that actually the mind is filled with positive thoughts. Then those positive thoughts lead to the secretion of health conducive hormones and secretions in the body. And that leads to good health. So now this is a factual documentary reality. But this cannot counter the basic aging process of the body. What it can do is, it can minimize or maximize. A positive attitude will minimize the effect. Or a negative attitude will maximize the effect. Now in the Bhagavad Gita, this 18th chapter, Krishna describes the five factors of action. Adhishthanam tatha karta, karanam cha sasatvita, vidhash cha sasacheshka, daivam chaiva sa panchamam. What are the five factors of action? Adhishthanam, the field of action. And that body, are our circumstances. Tha karta, karta is the soul. Karanam, karanam is the senses. Karanam cha sasatvita, the different senses. And fourth factor is this, vidhash cha sasacheshka. Very important. vidharsha prutakshesha, and then he describes daivam shaivatra panchamam. Determines the amount of endeavor we put in. Vidharshita-cheshta. So earlier also we were discussing that somebody may have some talent by destiny, but for him to actually become a trained or expert person, he has to put cheshta, he has to endeavor. A musician, he may have an act for music. So that by the past life karma is the karanam in the senses, a political capacity is there. It is not there in other people's capacity. Actually, when we talk about senses, so this devotion explains in his Govinda Bhashyam that we are not referring to the gross sensory organs. Because somebody has a magical, magnetic voice, and somebody has a mediocre frog-like voice. You know. Now, if you look at the voice box and neck cord, they are the same. It's not that their voice box is made of some different chemical. So at a biological level, it's very difficult to explain why this person has a sweet voice and this person doesn't have a sweet voice. There's nothing biologically different. Some person is able to draw very excellent paintings, and now this body, his fingers are made of the same muscles, of the same component, as somebody who is a very poor artist. So when we talk about the senses, they are not just the sense organs. The sense organs are similar for it, but the subtle senses are given certain endowments from the past life. So yes, somebody is talented, his karana will be special, senses will be special. But after that, there is chesha. Chesha is the endeavor that a person. And if you do the endeavor, then you get the result. Of course, the endeavor of the result, that is daivam chaivatra panchamam. Ultimately, it is the destiny which will determine whether we get the result or not. But still, the chesha makes a difference. Now, as you see, now the late Jayamushin gives a very important analysis in the Govinda Bhashya. He said, the scriptures contain both kinds of statements. Sometimes they say that the soul is not the doer. What is the famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita that says soul is not the doer? Prakriti Kriyamana, 3.27. And yet, the same scriptures tell the soul that he should do this and he should not do this. So any verse like that, what he should do and what he should not do? In the Bhagavad Gita, and in the most famous verse. Sarvadharman Paripatya, do this and don't do anything else. Krishna said, "Yah asmat shastra pramanam te karya karyo." This is very important. Therefore, act according to shastra. So he says there are both these kind of statements in the scriptures, where some places the scripture says that the soul is not the doer, the other place says the soul is the doer. So what is the actual reality? So he gives a little example of a woodcutter cutting a tree with the axe. So he says that we can say that the woodcutter cuts the tree, or we can say the axe cuts the tree. Both are true. Both are true. The woodcutter is cutting the tree, the axe is cutting the tree. Actually, the woodcutter using the axe is cutting the tree. So both are there. Now, when the scriptures want to emphasize that the soul has to do nothing with material nature, and actually material nature acts according to its own systems, then it is said the soul is not the doer. It is said that acts cut it. Now the soul The woodcutter, if he does not have the axe, can he cut?
I beat him,
he will simply break his hand. He cannot cut. So similarly, the soul without the senses cannot do anything. So somebody may be a very sweet singer, but if the soul gets jammed or the soul goes sore, can he sing? He wants to, but he can't. At least not in the material level. The heart may be singing, but what will happen in the material level? So, therefore, actually, the action at the material level is always done by the senses, by material natures, which are actually giving us the senses. Therefore, to illustrate to the soul that you are not the doer at the material level, it is said that actually the soul is not the doer, material nature is the doer. And on the other hand, material nature is insensual, it is doing. So, the axe will cut only when the woodcutter desires to cut, and he also puts the exertion. Similarly, when the soul has to desire endeavor, then the action will happen. And the scriptures want to point out that you have to desire, you have to endeavor. And then there is a you have to do this. So now, both are true because the soul acts to material nature. Now, of course, every analogy is limited. All of you remember? Analogy is like a rubber band. So, it can't fit around the full thing, it fits as much as it can. So now, the difference between we as souls and our bodies, and a woodcutter and a axe, is that the axe is completely inert. Whereas when we are in a body, the body acts according to its instincts. The body is dead, but just as a computer is dead, but once it is programmed and is given electricity, it will work. Isn't it? It works according to certain programs. So the body works according to certain programs. So basically, what the soul can do is, Rajoguna is one program that is running. Tamoguna is one program that is running. And Sattvaguna is one program that is running. So all that the soul can do is choose which program to activate. Choose which program to activate. That is, will I be influenced by Tamoguna? Will I be influenced by Rajoguna? Will I be influenced by Sattvaguna? But once he chooses, he goes to act accordingly. So therefore, it's more like our body is more like a programmed machine than an axe. And our presence basically activates the machine. But there are different buttons. This, this, this. Whichever button I press, I act accordingly. So, that means what we essentially do is choose. You know, if everything is in one's own hands, you know, there are certain famous critics, Sachin Tendulkar is there. Now, he has been by his past karma given the senses, the hands, the legs, the eyes in such a way that he can move them around expertly and hit the ball. Very expert. But yet, even he knows that he is not fully in control. So there are so many times when they say the batsman is out of form. Isn't it? Now, would any batsman want to be out of form? Nobody would ever want to be out of form. He is out of touch, out of form. You know, he swings the bat and he completely misses and his middle stuff is cancelled. Now does he want that? No. So although they are his talents, although he may say that these are my talents, but still they are not fully under his control. But, you know, he may be able to swing around and hit the ball much better than any ordinary cricket. But because by his past karma, he has been given that ability more. But even though he has given that ability, he's been given that ability much more than others, still that ability is not exclusively under his control. So therefore, the point here is that we are given certain karanas, certain senses, and we by our desires choose how we use senses. But still the senses and the sensory ability is not fully under our control. So when the scriptures say we are not the doers, that is to emphasize that we are not the only doers. It is not that we are absolutely non-doers, but rather we are not the only doers. So if we think we are the only doers, then we will become proud. I by my hard work did something. In modern times, the idea of a self-made man or the idea of single-handed success is very attractive. Somebody from now the cricket World Cup is going on, so I thought the cricket fever is still there. Then the whole team collapses and one player single-handedly performs very well and leads the team to victory. It's so glorious. The idea is, if we think I'm single-handedly doing everything, then we become very proud. So, the scriptures, they are not saying that we are just not at all in control of man. But we are not the only rulers. Therefore, we don't take the credit entirely for ourselves. Now, we are the doer. Apart from that, we have certain senses because of which we are able to do it. And ultimately, that's the sanction of the Lord. And without the other factors working out, we will not be able to do things. So, this is the balanced understanding. Yes? Yes?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So we've not come to that point in now. We got over there. Now, is our suffering real or is it false? So I was talking about new age spirituality, which means say everything is in the mind. The sufferings are also in the mind. Everything is in the mind. Just change your mind paradigm, everything will change. Actually, somebody may claim, I will not die. And a poor fellow, you say, I will not die. His body will be dead, the Yamadutas will come, will drag him, he'll be taken to Yamaraj, he'll say, I will not die. Yamaraj will say, you are dead.
You are dead already.
So, our mental perceptions may minimize or maximize the impact of the reality on us. Impact of the external reality on us. Just like, in the Bhagavad, the first canto described, Narada's mother passed away. But because he had a spiritual understanding, he could perceive this opportunity. But his mental perception didn't change the reality that his mother had passed away. So there is a factual external reality, and there is an internal reaction to that reality. So when modern people at a new age level, they try to say that actually. Like just now telling me, identity this is what, why God made this world so bad? So some of the relatives told him, why do you think that world is so bad? It's so nice. And if you tell them that the world is so bad, probably you must be very miserable, isn't it? Or you are very pessimistic, you don't see the bright side of life. No. There is a thing positive, and in fact, there are so many wonderful things to look forward to in life. Now, yes, we can be positive, and as devotees, we are supremely positive. What is the supreme, if Srila Prabhupada, who is constantly talking this world of Dukkhalayam, if he had been a pessimist, can he at the age of 69 go all alone to a distant country and teach a completely alien lifestyle to people whom he has never met before? Can even the world's greatest optimist do that? Will he have the courage to at the age of 70 go all alone with no money to a distant land? So, we can't, just because the devotees are telling us, or the scriptures are telling us, the acharyas are telling us that this world is a place of misery, does not mean that they are pessimists. So, now there are two distinct things. There is the external reality and there is the internal perception. So, what modern positive thinking does is, it tells us change the internal perception. That don't think that there is so much misery, there is so much opportunity, there is so much pleasure in this world. Just look around. Now, grace, this sort of change of internal perception is an attempt to deny the external reality. The external reality is that there are tsunamis, there are earthquakes, there is old age, there is disease, there is death. We cannot change that. So when the scriptures tell us, that this world is a place of misery, what are they doing? They are making us aware of the external reality. Becoming aware of the external reality is not possible. If a patient has serious cancer and the doctor tells him, my dear patient, you have very, very advanced in your cancer. Then why are you so pessimistic? No, it's not pessimism, it's actual. Now, if the doctor also says, no, that, okay, you are going to die. Don't travel and say, just die this time. Then that might be personal. The doctor says, okay, it's very serious, but you have to take this treatment. And if you take it, there is a good chance that you survive. Now, optimism has to be based on truth, not on illusion. Optimism that is based on illusion is suicidal. If a cancer patient is told that he doesn't have, he's not only told that he's having cancer, so that he'll be optimistic. No, he will just die. Because he won't take the treatment seriously, he won't take the disease seriously. So optimism based on illusion is simply suicidal. It's foolish and suicidal. So the scripture, what they do is, first they tell, this is the reality. This world is a place of suffering. Now after that, as devotees, when we see the factual reality, this world is a place of misery. Now, do we see it positively or negatively? Now, Lord Ramachandra, when he is told that you are exiled to the forest, that's a very sad reality. The person is about to be a king, supposed to be sent out to the forest immediately, there is nothing practically speaking. Now, Lord Ramachandra, how does he react? He says that, you know, I have the opportunity to make sure that my father's word is honored, to be an instrument for fulfilling the desire of my mother is referring to Paiti, to have the pleasure of seeing my younger brother enthroned as the king, and to myself be enriched by the wisdom and association of the great king in the world. He said, what is wrong? I see positivity everywhere.
This is positive thinking of Lord Ramachandra. What did he say?
I have the opportunity to make sure that my father's word is honored. I have the opportunity to fulfill the desire of my mother. I have the pleasure of having my younger brother enthroned as the king. And I also have the opportunity to benefit and enrich myself with the association of wisdom of the king in the forest. So, I see positivity everywhere. So it's not that devotees are pessimistic. Devotees are, they are always optimistic. But that optimism is based on reality. We don't deny reality. You know, Srila Prabhupada is telling, I would print all the volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita in just 2 months. Now is it possible? If they are pessimistic, they say, this problem. Pessimistic is impossible. Prabhupada, what did he say? Impossible in the world is a fool's wish. So that means that actually devotees are not pessimistic. They are highly optimistic. But it is optimism based on the recognition of reality. It is not an optimism based on denial of reality. So, at our stage, when we are in mental existence, we have to understand that these sufferings are real. I am going to undergo disease, I am going to undergo old age, I am going to undergo death, and it is going to be miserable. So if we try to deny, oh actually I am the soul, nothing is happening to me. But when the miseries come, we will see a lot is happening to us. You know, when diseases come, we see the pain, isn't it? So as long as a person is, now he was giving a simple example of somebody is catching a laptop. But we can take a more elaborate example of somebody watching a movie. As long as that person is glued to the movie, whatever happens to the movie is going to affect him. If the hero is beaten up, he will see beaten up. If the hero is wounded, he will feel shocked. So now, we may say, oh, we just have to turn off the television and the movie will close. But we can't do like that in material nature. No, it is a long process we have to follow. The long process of detachment. Progressive detachment that we have to follow. So, an essential principle of that progressive detachment is, to the extent we think the pleasures of material life to be real, to that extent the miseries of material life will also be real for us. To the extent we delight in bodily pleasures, to that extent we will suffer bodily pains. Because what happens? To the extent we delight in bodily pleasures, our consciousness is brought down into the body, and gets entrapped in the body. So it's like somebody is playing a cricket match, is watching a cricket match. And then, you know, the Indian fan watching the cricket match, and he sees something, and he goes, Yeah, very good, very good. And then, is he sitting in another board? And it's just switch off the TV. I'm not affected by it.
No, it can't do like that. Because
we have invested our emotions. You know, if that person had not invested in emotion, he would not be happy with sitting in the room for 6. But if he wants to be happy with the, when the 6 is there, he will also be forced to be miserable when he gets up. So basically, to the extent we delight in bodily pleasures, to that extent, we will suffer when there are bodily pains. Now, at our level, we have to recognize, first of all, that these miseries are real. Because I am attached. Ultimately, we can say they are unreal. But for me, as long as I am attached, they are real. And what is the solution? The solution is to become detached. And the way to become detached is to stop enjoying the material world. And then the more we become detached, what will happen is, the more we realize that what is happening to the body is not actually happening to me. But that will take a long time. That will come only when we are detached. You know, Maharaj in his new book, Yoga, I think I mentioned this earlier, he said that, although dying is difficult and painful, for those of us who have disengaged from the pursuits of the ego and have offered our hearts to God, death is a release. We, at the moment of death, we close our eyes. When we open our eyes, we are back home.
That is beautiful. So I repeat this, it's very profound.
Although dying is difficult and painful, that's how it is for all of us. But for those who have done two things, disengage themselves from the pursuits of the ego. That means they are not identifying with the body and they are not trying to aggrandize with the body. Those who have disengaged themselves from the pursuits of the ego and who have turned their hearts to God, that means they are no longer watching the cricket match, they have come to reality. Then what will happen? Death is just like the shock and the and that is a relief. At the moment of death, we close our eyes. When we open our eyes, we are back home. So it seems very sweet, but those who are two things, disengaged from the pursuit of the ego and offered our hearts to God, they are two big things. They are not so easy to do.
So that is our prana, peace, religion. Wherever peace,
amanina, amana, dena.
These are
disengaged from the pursuit of the ego. And keep the Shivalaga means offer our hearts to the Lord. Then that is a relief. Otherwise, that is a grief, a terrible retreat. So, at our level, we have to recognize this world in a miserable place. And we want to get out of this world. So, at our level, because we are attached, and our attachment creates the illusion that there is no misery in this world. This world is enjoyable. Therefore, see how it is done. We are attached, and because of our attachment, we think this world is enjoyable. And, but you see, people, when you tell them that this world is miserable, they say, why are you so pessimistic? Then their so called optimism is perpetuating their illusion. Then their desires create a certain perception in their life. Their desires create a perception that this world is very nice, I can enjoy all of it. And on top of that, the so called positive attitude, what it does? It perpetuates the illusion. It's like a person who. A person who is a drunkard. I can control the world. I can go here, I can go there. I can do whatever I want. I will tell him. She will get the gutter over there, fall in the gutter, slip and fall. Why are you so pessimistic? I can do whatever. This person simply wants to increase his suffering by so called optimism. So, first is, come out of the intoxication. Realize that there is so much danger. Vehicles are going out, the road is too free. You may fall and die. Attack yourself, fall and hurt yourself, you may die. So first, when you talk about this world, you look calm, it is to recognize the reality. Are there good things in life also? Yes, there are. We don't deny that. We don't deny that there are good things in life. We don't say that all people in this world are selfish and exploitative and demonic. Even among non-devotees also, there may be good people, because there is a Suguna also. But those good people and good things and beautiful things, why is this world miserable? Oh, the forms are so beautiful, the rivers are so beautiful. Yes, they are. But despite they being beautiful, still there is misery in this world. So our modern society uses a one-sided perception of reality where we see only the positives. Only the positives. So, and if you look at it in balance, look at it in balance, it's not that this world is 50% happens and 50% misery. Actually, the balance is that there is much more misery than happiness. Simple example is that if we take the greatest pleasure, the sexual pleasure. Sexual pleasure, the actual experience is just for a few moments, few minutes at the most. And the hankering and the lamenting and the competition, the struggle, it goes on for hours and days and weeks and years. So, it's not that it's 50% like there are movies like Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham. Sometimes happiness, sometimes misery. It's not like that. It is mostly misery. As you know, Maharaj says that, what is that? Actually, Maharaj is boasted in that verse. He says, Putra Shisha Shisukam Bhadrashi Rupa. He says, this verse is this coming for you and makes Nadi Grahana Sukham Bhadrashi. Very beautiful verse. He says that, I'll just take out this verse. It's a very insightful verse in the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. So it's saying, Putra Shisha Shuti Sukha Vrudatushi Rupa. So it's saying, so Lord Mr. Devi, my dear, will ask me to answer some questions. Putra means which, what? Ashish. Ashish is blessing. What blessing can I ask from my dear Lord? Shruti Sukha. Sukha is what? Which Shruti refers not to the very scripture Shruti, it refers to one word. You can also refer to the Karmakanda section of very scripture, which glorify material pleasures. Shruti Sukha. Since we hear about the pleasures, but when we actually experience them, they are Mrugatushi Rupa. They are like Mr. Miraj. And there is this Kvedam Kalevar. Somebody says, I have a healthy body and I can use Kvedam. Kvedam is Kalevaram is body. Kvedam Kalevaram. Ashesha Vrujan Viroha. Ashesha Vrujan. Vrujan is diseases. Ashesha is unlimited. Viroha is the breeding place. So it is very, very eloquent by a pertinent translation. The breeding place of unlimited diseases. And according to scientists, actually there are something like, of course there are many, but there are some 40,000 diseases known, million diseases. And out of that only 4,000 diseases have cured. That means all other diseases, this number vary according to different scientists. But the point is, they are just telling you have the disease, what to do? Die. Suffer. You can't do anything. I don't remember exactly. Something like one, almost like 40,000 and 4,000. It's almost like 10, oh, you know, only 10%. These keep varying according to different estimates. But the point is, there are many diseases for which you don't have a tangible cure. So, Ashesha Vrujan Viroha. Ashesha Vrujan Viroha means unlimited breeding, unlimited diseases are there over here. So, you know, one doctor was telling me that there is one disease in which what happens? Out the nerve cells near the excretory organs lose their sensitivity. And when that happens, the person, when he has to pass out urine or excreta, he doesn't feel the urge. And then he's just walking around normally and suddenly he finds that, you know, his clothes become smelly or clothes become wet. It's a humiliating disease. It's so terrible. And you know, maybe the body, I'm so proud and I'm enjoying this, is what can happen actually. The body can totally humiliate the condition. So, generally, of course, this disease happens when a person gets paralyzed. The lower body becomes dysfunctional, and along with that, this also happens. It's a terrible disease. So, there's one congregation devotee, he was not seriously disease, he was coming to a temple one. And then for 6 months, he didn't come. Then, after that, he came. I asked the story, where will you? He said, I had a very rare disease. So actually on the, you know, the eardrum that is there, the tympanum, you know, generally we see some people have hair over here, around the sometimes. So he said, one hair had grown on the tympanic membrane. On the tympanic membrane. And that's why whenever I would hear any sound, that hair would vibrate. That would cause so much pain. And he said, to remove this hair, because that's a very delicate part, it required something like 40 lakh volts. And he said 40 lakh worth surgery to remove that hair. If I was in one hair, there might have been some small, small hair also just leaves. So, and he said, I was
shocked by the disease,
but I was just amazed by the power of Maya. He said, Guruji, I am only the fourth person in the world to get this disease.
So he's proud of. So I just see the nature of Maya. A miserable disease, but we are proud that I am unique in my disease. So what can Maya make us proud of? Ashish Rujan Viroha.
And then he says, Nirvidyate. Nirvidyate is to give up. Nirvidyate not to jano, yet apiti vidvan. Even if somebody is vidvan, somebody is very ignorant, still he is not able to give it up. Why? Kaman, love. When material desires come, they burst. They create a tremendous craving in our heart. Kaman, love. Now you see, materialistic people also say, they acknowledge. Now in their Hindi movie song, they say, oh, my heart is burning with love for you. But they think, when I get you, I will be able to happy. But that will just temporarily douse the flame, but afterwards the flame will burn much more. Kaman, love, madhu, love. A little drop. Lava is like lava matra kavasanga. Lava is very small quantity. So madhu lava is very tiny quantity. Madhu lava shamayandura vai. So it is very difficult to satisfy and it is very difficult to give up. Both. So in this smart, I am saying both things. First, you think that the pleasure is mridatrishni rupa. There is no pleasure at all. And second, you think it is madhu lava. It is a drop over. So what is it? Is there pleasure or is not there at all? So as Radha Maharaj said in that classic statement, there is enough happiness in this world to keep us attached to our suffering. So is there happiness? Yes, there is. There is, because what happens is, we can say the soul has nothing to do with the body and the soul cannot enjoy the body either. That is true. But when the soul comes in a particular body, by the spell of Maya, when the particular sense objects that are meant for the senses of that body, when they come in contact, then the soul feels some pleasure. That is where the spell of Maya. That is there, but even that is temporary. So, the scriptures don't say that there is absolutely no pleasure. Yes, if a man, you know, comes into contact with a female dog, it's unlikely that he will feel any pleasure. Unless, of course, he's a sexual pervert. But a man, when he comes in contact with a woman, what happens is, because the body is designed in a particular way, the male body and the female body, the certain hormones are secreted in a particular way, certain feelings are triggered in the mind, a person feels pleasure. So that pleasure is there, but that is very temporary, nothing of any. Now, from the absolute point of view, because the soul has nothing to do with the body, there is no pleasure. But from the negative point of view, from the experiential point of view for us, yes, we do feel there is pleasure. But that pleasure is temporary. And then we recognize it's not very temporary, it is very binding. It intoxicates and binds us a little bit. So therefore, at our stage, the miseries are really real and the pleasures are real. But the balance of this world is that the miseries are much, much more than pleasures. Therefore, by recognizing this, if I can't just say that I don't want the miseries. I don't want the miseries, but the miseries come as a part of the package of the pleasure. So if I don't want the misery, then I should not want the pleasure also. If I give up both of them, then I will become detached. The more we become detached, then you can see that whatever is happening is not to me. It is to my body. And I am different from my body. So then, J.P. Maharaj gives an example, the Adishan also repeats very often, of a person driving a car. If I am walking along, my neck gets fractured. It's a serious pain. It's not just a pain, it's also it's a disability because I cannot walk, I cannot move. Similarly, if I'm driving a car and my car gets punctured, I can't move. That's also a problem. But among these two, my car getting punctured and my leg getting fractured, which is much more severe? My leg getting fractured. Why? Because, you know, we identify with the body. Now, we say the car body analogy. But if we rely on car body analogy, then we will understand that when the car gets punctured and then the body gets fractured, it will not be a misery, it will be be an inconvenience. It's inconvenience. That's like if my car is ratchet, car is punctured. It's not that I'm a little, but it's the same thing. I have to go for the program, I have to go for the detail. I can't go. So, that's why even a pure devotee may take treatment. Pure devotee may take treatment because he wants to serve Krishna. And if the body is dysfunctional, then he cannot serve Krishna. You know, there is a pastime. Who is that? Mukund Datta, who is a physician? In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Mukund Datta, Mukund Sarkar. Mukund Sarkar, he was a physician. And, you know, he saw that peacock fan, fanning the king, Muslim king. And suddenly he remembered Krishna and he fainted. And he fell from top, right on the ground. And what did he say? It's epilepsy. I had attack of epilepsy. So what Maharaj was telling is that actually Devamrita Maharaj was telling in a class, very beautiful insight. He said that, you know, an ordinary person cannot understand what are the ecstatic reciprocations going on between Krishna and his devotee. Now because of the mercy of the Lord, this king could understand. So similarly, sometimes we may see that a devotee, you know, he gets a very painful cancer or he dies in a ghastly accident. So that will seem as horrible as Mukund Sarkar just suddenly falling down from a high place and falling and maybe breaking his hand, breaking his leg. He says, but we see only externally. Internally, although externally his body was collapsing, maybe it was damaged also. But internally the remembrance of Krishna had gotten extended. So similarly for advanced devotee, even if their body undergoes trauma, we should not be misled by that external injury. You should know that there is something very special and intimate happening between Krishna and his devotee. So, you know, Tamal Krishna Maharaj departed in that unfortunate accident. So actually, Satyarajpur wrote a very nice article. He said, before that, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was contributing an article on dying in different religious traditions. And he was talking the perfect death in the Vaishnava tradition. So he wrote an article on that. And then Satyaraj said, actually Maharaj orchestrated that in Mayapur. Now he said, how is it perfect death? Actually died of accident. But he was saying, okay, externally it was an accident. But if you see from the broader perspective, it was in Mayapur Dham. Not just in Mayapur Dham. It was when he was in, it was in the area of where Hridas Thakur's place was Puliya Gram, and it was early morning hours. He was chanting, his beatbag was there with him, and there were devotees around him. It was a holy place, a holy atmosphere. So he said, actually, you know, what is happening between the devotee and the Lord? We don't know. We see only the external vision and we get this life. But you have to understand that there is much deeper reality that is there. But that deeper reality is accessible only when we have gone deep in our Krishna consciousness. For us, if an accident happens, you know, whether the accident happens, whether it is in Mayapur or whether it is in Calcutta or whether it is in New York, we will not think of that. We will think only it's an accident. Why didn't the accident happen? So actually, if we are deep in our Krishna consciousness, our Acharya was telling me that once we were staying in Mayapur with some devotee, some Russian devotee, and you're a Slovakian devotee, something like that. So that night, they did not have any mosquito net. His whole body was bitten. He was, you know, like practically red marks all over his body. And I said, so you did not have a net? He said, no, you don't be suffering. And he said, you wouldn't speak English. He said, no, mosquito biting, sinful blood going. Prasad eating, pure blood coming.
So, now, you know, mosquito bite is right, we don't bother, you know, whether it is Mayapur or whether it is Calcutta or whether it is water, whether it is our voice. You know, why is this mosquito biting? This doesn't actually. So, if we are deep in our Krishna consciousness, you know, we will see things happening at a deeper level.
But if we are not deep in our Krishna consciousness, then the external realities do affect us. So, what do we do? On one side, we try to go deep in our Krishna consciousness. On the other side, we also realize that external reality will fight me and I should not get entangled in it. So, what we were discussing was that this material misery is actually real for us. There's a deny that it's real and you want to get rid of it, become detached from it. You can't just, let's say by mental adjustment, oh, I am the body, I am the soul, you are the body, nothing is happening to me. No. No. You know, when Raghunath Maharaj started the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, he told the doctors over there that, you know, when you love a person, you can't say that you love his soul and don't care for the body. You love the full person. You love the body, the mind and the soul. Of course, the soul is most important. But if the person is sick, for him the body is most important. Because the body is causing him trouble. You have to offer care and love for the body also. So you have to love the complete person. So now, I was originally discussing this point, that materialistic people say that a devotee is going to suffer death and a non-devotee is going to suffer death. What is the difference? So I was telling, that what are the miseries at the time of death? There are three main miseries. There is the pain caused by the body breaking down itself, and there is the great misery caused by having to lose everything that we have lived for. So one misery is about the present. Measure of present is my body is breaking down and I can't do anything about it. One misery is about the past. Everything that I have built up throughout my life, I'm going to lose it. And one misery is about the future. What is going to happen to me? Fear of the unknown. So, death, at the moment of death, there are three miseries. Prana, which we can analytically understand. That my body is breaking down right now, and I'm helpless about it. About what is the present? The past is everything that I have worked for. My estate, my family, my house, my disease, my profits, everything is going to be transferred away from me. And here, I don't know what's going on. So now let us see, what a devotee, what happens to these three things. First is, the body breaking down. So we discussed, the body breaks down, it is not a misery, it is an inconvenience. It's an inconvenience, because you understand, yeah, I wanted to serve Krishna with this body, but I can't serve him anymore. You know, when Narmada Maharaj was our, for a long time he was a BBT manager, BBT production manager in Mumbai. So when, he was very exemplary devotee, when he finally came to know that he has got this Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's disease is a degenerative disease of the brain. When the motor nervous system stops functioning, and a person loses control over the body, that means, you know, I can observe and my hand is just moving like this. I can't stop the hand from moving. I want to move, I can't move. I don't want to move, it moves. It's a very miserable condition. Like that my legs automatically move, or when I want they don't move. It's a miserable disease. So when you finally diagnosed that he has Parkinson's disease, you know, Maharaj decided to do the Prayavrata. Prayavrata is in the Vedic tradition, when a person feels that his life mission is complete, and he wants to end his body, then he fasts to that. Fast from food and fast from water. And then he just gives up his body. So this other devotee, Bhima Prabhu, said, I had gone there to him. I told him, please, there's no need to torture yourself like this. Then you can take some food. So he said, the reply that Narmada Maharaj gave, I pray that it always remembers in my heart. He said, my body was meant to serve Krishna. If now, because of disease, I cannot use the body to serve Krishna, what reason do I have to maintain this? Profound level of consciousness. No. That my body is meant for serving Krishna. For that purpose, I was eating and maintaining this body. Now, if I cannot serve Krishna with this body, what reason do I have to maintain this body? So, this is not suicide. This is actually a very exalted level of consciousness and detachment, of devotion and detachment. So, suicide is frustrated with life and one feels that death is better than life. A devotee is not like that. A devotee understands that yes, life has no meaning if I am not serving Krishna. And this body is incapable of serving Krishna. So, for a devotee, the body is a vehicle and the vehicle breaks down, it is an inconvenience. Therefore, the misery is not so much. Misery is there, but it's only a vehicle, it's not a misery. Like, what about the past? What are the past? The devotee is the devotee attached to the things of this world? He is attached to the devotional. And attached to the devotional may mean he is attached to all of them for the sake of Krishna. And because he is attached to Krishna much more than things of this world, the devotee is not unhappy. The devotee is ready to give up. Parikshit Maharaj, he was very, although he was very responsibly serving and he was taking care of everything in a very, very competent way, but then he was so happy that he died, he was left. The devotee is not attached to the things of this world. And what about the future? Is the devotee afraid of the future? He knows, I'm going to go back to Krishna. And even if I don't go back to Krishna, Krishna will take me somewhere where I can continue my devotee service. So in this way, we can objectively also understand that if we advance in devotee consciousness, the event of death will happen to us also. But the pain of death will be much, much lesser. And to the extent we are advanced, the pain will be greater. So this way, as devotee, we can transcend the material world by our practice of Krishna consciousness. So any questions? Yes.
First you were saying from detachment from body. So sitting every day, six chapters and Chetu Dharma Mahatman, I think that detachment is same by having the more positive within the Chetu Dharma Mahatman. Impressions that bind us to the body as we move, Chetu Dharma Mahatman. So I wanted to understand how it happens by chanting Hari Name. You said it happens by detachment. So how does detachment come by chanting Hari Name?
Okay, how does attachment come by chanting? Chanting basically leads more to purification. Cheto Darpan Mahatma. And when we are purified, then we basically what does purification mean? Purification is not abstract. Purification basically means that the dirty things in our avatar, lost chanting, we will need to leave. And they get removed. When they get removed, then actually what do lust and the greed they do? They create illusions that through the body and through the body the sense objects we can enjoy. So when lust is removed, then that illusion is removed. And that illusion is removed, automatically we come to reality. So in that sense, when we come to the reality, it will be detached. Like a drunkard, you know, he thinks is alcohol is going to make him happy. So because of the lust or greed, whatever you want to call that, at like addiction to alcohol, he is under the illusion that the alcohol is going to make him happy. And therefore, he can't be stressed. But if he is purified of that anartha, that lust, greed, then the illusion will not be there. And once the illusion is not there, then a person will become detached. So actually, Ravindra Sadhupu has written a very beautiful book called Endless Love. So in that there is one article called Immortal Longings. So there is the detachment of a devotee is not the frustrated abandonment of a sense enjoyed. You know, the frustrated abandonment. Somebody is trying to enjoy the senses and he can't enjoy, so he's frustrated and he abandons. Give it up. Like sour grapes. He says the detachment of a devotee is the only sensible reaction to a factually correct perception. Very beautiful. It's the only sensible reaction to a factually correct perception. So if we can take the factually correct perception, that this body is a source of misery and that I am not this body, then that factually correct perception will automatically lead to the sensible reaction of distancing ourselves from this body. So in this way we distance ourselves from the body. Okay? So that's how it is. So what happens by chanting is that we become purified. So we are able to perceive the reality then. Here's one more question. So when we perceive the reality correctly, then we are able to become automatically fully detached.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. I have a question. How is it possible for a person, whether he is Grihastha, Sannyasi, or Brahmachari, to be physically detached from this material world?
How is it possible to be physically attached to the material world? Our process is not so much a detachment, but of attachment. You know, Prabhupada is in lecture. All our injuries are caused because of detachment. And this is going to tell, this is detachment from Krishna. So we have to detach from Krishna, and that's why we have to do. So our, what Krishna feels, we don't care. Because we don't care for Krishna's feelings, because we are detached from Krishna, so we are suffering. So our process is not so much of developing detachment from material things, as it is of developing attachment to Krishna. So attachment to Krishna will automatically bring detachment from material things. Now attachment to Krishna means that it's not just that we are always thinking of Krishna's pastimes and trying to be mentally Vrindavan and all that. You can try that, but that is not so easy at our level. At our level, attachment to Krishna will mean active engagement and absorption in Krishna's practical service. Active engagement and absorption. You don't know much to engage, you may engage but our mind will go anywhere. Active engagement and absorption in Krishna's practical service. So when we do this, then that itself gives so much joy, so much sense of purpose and sense of joy. Sense of purpose, why? Because we can see. Actually, especially if you preach Krishna consciousness, see, at our individual level, struggling against Maya is very difficult. Saying no to Maya is difficult, saying no to Maya is painful. But if we start preaching, and we see that by our preaching, others are benefited. So we can see that other people, they are suffering and now they are become Krishna devotees. And although we shouldn't think that by my preaching it has happened, but still, we can see that, you know, I was the instrument, and Krishna is the instrument. So when we start seeing, that I am also able to do something useful for others, then that gives us a higher motivation for our internal life. Yes, I am able to serve others, I am able to serve the spiritual master, I am able to serve the Rishi master. Therefore, let me find a Rishi master. Therefore, as you go to do practical services, then what happens? That gives us a sense of purpose. Yes, I want to do something. And not only a sense of purpose, it also gives a sense of joy. Because when we are able to do something, we feel a great satisfaction. My life is being used in something constructive. So, by trying to keep our lives busy in service to Krishna, we can become detached from material things. That is a practical way we should become detached. Get ourselves busy in service to Krishna.
To what extent the brahmachari as a necessary follows the path of Asudhya Vishwanathan Dhanathan?
Yes, we follow Shukadeva Goswami in principle, but we follow our immediate acharyas in the example that they have set. So, Srila Prabhupada traveled all over the world. Srila Prabhupada built big temples. Srila Prabhupada even went to people's houses to raise funds. Srila Prabhupada taught his disciples how to cook. So yes, Srila Prabhupada was a pure devotee, as pure you can say as Shukadeva Goswami. But Prabhupada wanted to do good to the world, you want to preach. And then the example that he has set, we follow his footsteps. We follow his footsteps and we follow his instructions. So in principle, we also want to become detached like that. But in practice, we do it the way Srila Prabhupada and our spiritual master and our senior Vaishnavas exemplify and instruct us.
So, I just said that by the endeavor of developing in Buddha, we can be liberated in this world also. So, what is the exact purpose of being liberated within this world?
What does it mean? What does Jivan Mukti, as a technical word for being liberated in the world, mean? So, Sri Prabhupada will quote that verse from Bhaktisiddhanta Sindhu. When a person is fully engaged in Krishna Sakti, Haya Sri Hari Dasya, so, Jivan Mukti means when we are fully engaged in service to Krishna, with our body, mind and words, then there is liberation, because that is what we will do when we go back to Krishna. So, at a more advanced level, or more analytical, intricate level, you know, we have a swarupa in the spiritual world. We will be a sakha, or a sakhi, or whatever. As we become more and more purified, then our swarupa awakens, our awareness of our swarupa awakens. So a pure devotee serves Krishna at both levels. We will do the practical service that is required in this world, very efficiently, very emotionally. At the same time, a pure devotee has a dual dimensional existence. Where the devotee also in swarupa as a manjari or a sakhi, So you participate in passing of Radha Krishna. As I, Rupa was Arunanda Goswami. You know, he was in this material world as but he, in his Swarupa, you know, he went to the spiritual world where there was, you know, there was festivities going on. And that's he tried himself, and he saw he tried, he separated, he got in Dajishnam again. So, at the very advanced level, you must be, we are aware of the Swarupa, and we are also aware of our role there and the activity going on over there. But that is very advanced. You know, one of our Prince Acharya, I think this Chakravarti Pada, he says that there are three kinds of Mahabharata. The first is that those who are Gunatita and Swarupa Siddhi. They are beyond the three modes and they have realized the Swarupa. That means they are not, the Maya has no influence on them and they are also realized the spiritual, they are the Swarupa. That means they are like both, their both legs are in the spiritual world. Only they are waiting for the body to fall as per its course of action, as per its animation, and then back in the spiritual world also. So, they are Swarupa Siddha and Gunatita. The second level of Mahabharata is, he is Gunatita but not Swarupa Siddha. That means, a person is beyond the effects of the mode, but he has not yet realized Swarupa in the spiritual world. This is like one feet in the material world, one foot in the material world, one foot in the spiritual world. And the third is, he is not Swarupa Siddha, he is not Gunatita, but he is absolutely Krishna in the service of Krishna. That means, that is like a person whose both legs are in the material world, but his eyes are fixed in the spiritual world. That means, he has, although the modes is still full, his desire is fixed. So, all these are called as Mahabharata. So, Jivan Mukti means that, you know, we are liberated from the body and its desires and are fixed in service to Krishna. That service to Krishna may be with Guru Siddhi, may be with Gunatita, it may not be with us. That doesn't matter.
So, at an advanced age, is it possible that we have the power to leave a body when we want?
Yes, with Krishna Mukti is surely possible. Now, a devotee does not bother about this. It's a mystic siddhi, Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra had that. A devotee does not bother about that primarily. But if the devotee wants, he can do that. He can do that,
sure. Yes? Hare Krishna. Take your question. Maharaj. Guru was saying, the more we indulge in the pleasures of this world, the more we have to purge in the sufferings of this world. So, I wanted to know if it includes the pleasure of prasadam, taking prasadam, because spiritually one has to enjoy it maybe at internal, but when scripture is almost self-gratification, what it actually means?
Well, you will get a wide variety of answers in response to this question. So, then there are different devotees who have different views. So, you know, one day he was preaching in China and he was telling me that, you know, when he was preaching in China, there are two devotees who were preaching, two Maharajas were preaching. The Divi Narasimha Maharaj and the Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Now, Divi Narasimha Maharaj practically used only vegetables. Very, very awesome. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was a very, very refined person. You know, even if you make the best kind of sandesh, the sugar is a little less than that. You will just try before that. So, it got perfect. So now, both moods are perfectly okay. It's not that. See, again, if you want, Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, let us say that, you know, he would mix, whenever you give Bhakti Prasadam, he would mix all the items together. So that his tongue would not taste some bread. That's what I mean. Srila Prabhupada would not even mix rice and dal. He would take rice separately and dal separately. Each of them is prasadam. I want to relish, taste prasadam individually, every item. So now, whatever you want to do, you can claim that you are following a particular ashram. So, that's why there is a broad circle within which we can situate ourselves according to our, not just our liking, but according to our personal situation also. So, it's not that prasadam is sense gratification. Nonetheless, prasadam is not sense gratification. It is very important to handle that sense. But it is within the, it is very much within Krishna consciousness. That's what we are saying. We are eating food which is offered to Krishna, spoken by Vaishnava. So, generally speaking, it just happens over a period of time. As a person, I am very, very attached to prasadam. So I can't speak strongly about that. But the point is that it happens over a period of time that we will often start realizing that Krishna consciousness is wonderful in many, many ways. And prasadam is not the only way. So, initially, prasadam is the most wonderful. And it is one of the most wonderful things. But as we advance, we start realizing that, you know, I want to release Krishna consciousness in all ways. If I eat too much prasadam, I cannot do other things. I cannot serve properly, I cannot study properly, I cannot hear properly, I cannot think properly. So, you know, we want to take prasadam, but in a way that it doesn't impede our other Krishna consciousness. But initially, if our taste is coming only prasadam and not so much in other things, so even if you indulge in prasadam, it doesn't matter. Actually, when Sarvam Bhattacharya, you know, when he would quote that, Prapti Matsumya Muktamya, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought to Jagannath, Sarvam Bhattacharya. Yes, he quotes the verse in the Padma Purana. Prasadam, as soon as you read it, take it immediately. So, now, yes, take it immediately. That example is there in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So the same Chaitanya Charitamrita also has the example of Haridas Thakur. When the prasadam was brought to him, what did he do? He offered obeisance. He did not do prakti matre na bhokta. So, you know, we can always be selective in quoting whatever we want. Again, the same point. But the point is that, generally, Prabhupada says that, you know, if you eat a lot and do a lot of hard work so that you can digest that food and then serve Krishna. So if our overeating is especially interfering with our practical service by causing oversleeping, by causing indigestion, then it's a matter of concern. But otherwise, generally there are two dangers. One is that we just oversleep and cause bodily indigestion. Other is that if we take too much opulent food, it may trigger our material desires. Because what happens is, although prasadam is spiritual, we do not see this spiritual. And if we see it materially, then our material enjoyment mentality is dormant. It is not there. It is dormant. And then, when we enjoy a little bit, that sort of awakens the dormant mind. And then, we may go into other forms of enjoyment which are forbidden. Eating sweets or eating opulent prasadam is not forbidden. But it can stimulate us in a dormant direction. Therefore, it's good if you can be cautious. But there is no need to be fanatical about it. Now, yes, the sweets are there, nice challenges that we can take. You know, Bhakti Kasmada is very hard, I mean, he's a very heavy person. But even in that, even in Brahmacharya and Krishna consciousness, this Vaishnava culture involves both fasting and feasting. And to know when to fast and to know when to feast. That requires not just detachment, but it is Vaishnava sensitivity. Something like that. I don't need the word Vaishnava sensitivity, but it is that an art which has to be done. So it's not that, you know, all the time one has to be always the austere. The festivals and that one can take necessary. But then one thing is very clear with Prabhupada is opulent food should not be everyday. Sweets and opulent food should not be everyday. But if it's there, you know, I heard one lecture of Rahas Maharaj where he talked about it. He doesn't talk much about it. But what he talks about when they talk sensitivity, there are two things. You take only prasadam and take it at regulated times. So he didn't say that at regulated time you should not take sweet and things like that. So yes, if it's served to everyone, we can also take it. Actually for us to even follow these two is very difficult. First we follow, take only prasadam. But if you take it at regulated times, it's a little difficult. Because prasadam comes spontaneous. But in general, we don't have to be paranoid about the problem. No. We can face the problem, but we are really careful about each other. If it is triggering our internal mentality, or if it is triggering our bodily indigestion, if that is not happening, then we can face the problem. As I said, over a period of time, what will happen is that we were doing the Bhakti Shastri course, no, we are doing TTC in TTC in Mayapur, so Rathmandal Prabhu was teaching. He is a very clear, he is called the teacher's teacher. He is the pioneer of teaching in this course.
So he said very nicely, he said, you know, after you, sometimes when you overeat, then you oversleep and you wake up and you are not able to do anything. Then over a bit of time you start realizing that overeating costs me too much. It's not worth it. So he said, it is not naturally. But although it's that realizing it comes naturally, my temptation will also come naturally. So we have to implement this condition. But over a period of time, practically itself we can see, if I overeat, it takes away so much of my time for other services and other activities, which are also in one thing joy for me. So in trying to get one joy, I'm depriving myself of other joy. This is all of course self-centered calculation. Nothing you are pleasing Krishna. But of course, when you're serving Krishna, you're also pleasing Him. So, but even from our point of view, so we can enjoy the sadhana, but not in such a way that it offsets our other services. You like that?
There was a time Srila Prabhupada and Sinal Krishna Maharaj and Arya Prashad together with somebody who was. Sinal Krishna Maharaj was watching Srila Prabhupada to see which preparation Prabhupada would eat first and then in what order he would take the preparation. How would Prabhupada eat? So Sinal Krishna Maharaj, he was trying to eat the same way. The Srila Prabhupada was eating. Prabhupada eat that, now eat this. Now he's eating that, now I'll eat this. The Prabhupada saw him and he said, with honoring prasadam, there's no hard and fast rules.
There's no hard and fast rules. Prabhupada was very fast. In the Prabhupada, Yamuna Mataji, Prabhupada enjoys prasadam. You know, of course, you cannot say that this is Nakal India. Prabhupada also had a purpose. That was how he was training his disciples to cook. And actually cooking is a very important part of Vaishnava culture. Very, very important part. You know, there is this whole, there was one fast food product CEO, there was a lady, she gave an interview. And she said, what is our ambition? You know, they basically provide things like noodles and things like that. So then our dream is that in the future, nobody in the world will have to spend time in cooking. What a demoniac dream. Cooking is a devotional activity. They will actually just pre-produce all food and you do that. So now from a Western point of view, practical point of view, it is very convenient. You just have to do it. But actually, it's a reciprocation. That's why Bhumite Bhojayate Chaiva is considered to be one of the reciprocations that is loved by them. So, it's an important part of Vaishnava culture. And those, especially for many girls, that, you know, for their cooking and serving sannyasi is a big opportunity for them. So, we should not think like that. We are very young sadhakas. But the point is, Vaishnava culture involves that we cook nicely and serve prasadam nicely. So, there was one Sunday piece with Lekkari Radha Maharaj giving. It's a very amazing lecture. He said, what is the Sunday feast? What is the feast? He said that actually when all the devotees cook nicely for Krishna, then Krishna feasts on our bhakti. Krishna feasts on our bhakti. And then when he is pleased with our bhakti, he fills the prasadam with his mercy. And then we feast on Krishna's mercy.
That is the Sunday feast. He said, we see Krishna peace on our bhakti and we peace on Krishna's bhakti.
And then I said, not only that. So the Vaishnavas are cooking, the Vaishnavas love. Vaishnavas love not only for Krishna, Vaishnavas love is also for all of us. But we are all in the community. So we peace not only on Krishna's mercy, we also peace on the Vaishnavas love. Now, so that is a very wonderful way of understanding what is Sunday feast. We are most of us far, far away from that consciousness. But still, the point is that prasadam is considered a very important limb of us. And we have to try to raise our consciousness so that we can actually feel prasadam in a devotional way. Chaitanya Charitamrita is filled with so many chapters. How Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepts prasadam in the house of devotees. And not only that, and especially, you know, we should not criticize anyone if they take too much prasadam. Because completely against Vaishnava culture. It was against Vaishnava culture. And you see that way, Amoha, you know, what did he say? The sannyasi and he too much. What happened? He got defeated. He said, what is the problem? I'm just making a sensible reaction to a factual reality. Factual reality is eating too much. And it's just a reaction, you're eating too much. I'm saying, no. Obviously, no, actually that's not the Vaishnava culture. You should never say at least like that, even if you can't avoid feeling like that. Because ultimately, Vaishnava culture is you want to serve also. So a Vaishnava is given the opportunity to serve him, that's fine. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very positive. See, bhakti does not mean that we deny our individuality. Individuality means what? If a devotee likes a particular food item. He's a simple guy, kind of sense. He like that. Said about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he knew when they were serving Prasad, he knew what every devotee likes. They serve him that, serve him that, serve him that. So, that time, many of you know about this, of course. About a couple of years ago when the Krishnamiji festival was there in Mumbai. So around something like 31, Prabhupada got out of that come to that. Because the Juhu some anniversary was also there. So from there, after that the Lord had come. So, these are all like senior disciples of the Prabhupada. So what Maharaj did was, Balan Maharaj, he inquired on the temples where they were staying, what are the food items that they like. And for each of these 31 devotees, there were 31 special menus made. Every devotee was given what they were like. So they were so passionate by that. And it requires so much effort to cook. But you don't think that, if a devotee likes something that is a sunset dish. It may be, but at least that is not Vaishnava culture to feel like that. But a devotee should not think that, this is my spiritual taste. But others should not think that it is a sunset dish. Because devotee likes other things. That is an opportunity for us to serve Krishna. The Prabhupada is like a shoulder. So, everybody is good. Radha Maharaj, he is very particular of pizza. So, Gauranga was telling the pizza preaching story. All of you know the pizza preaching story? So, what happened was, Raja Maharaj told Gauranga that we should have pizza in our Govinda. Pizza? Pizza. No, because India is getting westernized, people like pizza. Mara pizza, I tasted pizza. I didn't taste all that. Mara said, whose pizza will taste it? So if some person, some devotee has to taste it, that devotee doesn't know how to cook pizza. What you eat was not pizza, it's a perverted reflection of pizza. So, actually, they send Radha Vallabha Prabhu all the way to Italy just to learn how to cook pizza. He went to Italy and almost 2 or 3 months he was there. Every day learning how to cook pizza. And then after that, he cooked pizza. Then they said, Maharaj, now he has learned. Can he start cooking? He says, no. He says, I will examine. And then every day he would cook pizza and Maharaj would pursue it. And every day after eating, he would give some comment. He says, particular, this sweetness was not good. This salt was not good. And every day Maharaj would tell something. He says, this was good, but this was not good. And after almost 1.5 months, there is a now, there is a kind of, now we can cut pizza in the Govinda. And there, the curry pizza, what happened was, many of you have seen that Radha Maharaj met the President of India, Pratibha Party. So that was the result of pizza pitch. So how that happened was, she is a Maharashtrian, and her son stays in Mumbai. And her son likes pizza very much. Then he came to know, that in ISKCON Govinda they have pizza. So he started coming to the Radha Govinda temple. I started liking pizza. His wife also started coming. And his wife started attending the Gita course. He started chanting also. So then once he had come, Maharaj was pursuing that. Maharaj went to meet him. And what had happened, his mother had won the presidential. He had become the president. So he had come with a great group of friends for a party to Govinda. And probably there were like 10 different varieties of pizzas in front of him. And they were all left in place, and Maharaj personally was serving him. Take this, this also, like, take a little. So he was telling, you are very touched by Maharaj now, but he was telling Maharaj, actually Maharaj, I'll be honest with you. My wife comes to the temple for bhakti, I come for pizza. So Maharaj smiled, keep coming.
So then Maharaj told, going forward, this is the power of Ija. I told you.
And then finally, they told him to know what Mayapur. And then they sent Rahapun through with him to Mayapur. And Mayapur also there is for Pisa's person, to feed him. And then after just coming back from Mayapur, got on to a point. And he said, how was it? Very nice, very nice. Then he said, you wanted Rahul Maharaj to meet your mother and give us a view. Can you arrange that? Yes, sure, I'll arrange that. And in 15 minutes, they got him out from the president's office. 15 minutes. And the whole meeting was arranged in 3-4 days. And they went and then Maharaj finished her very nicely in the time that she had. So Maharaj said that actually, we are interested in preaching. And Prasadam can be a very, very powerful preaching. Go by the secret teacher, secret word. Now, one time, one person asked me this question. He was a traditional Hindu person. How can you call pizza as prasad? Prasad is sacred, prasad is traditionally some halwa or some peda. You are insulting the sacred word peda by calling the special item pizza as prasad. So, even now, many traditional Indians feel shocked. How do you call pizza as prasad or what? Chowmin as prasad. The curious is odd. So, actually, to understand this, we have to understand the dynamic relationship between the cultural and the spiritual. See, prasad is both a cultural item and a spiritual principle. The spiritual principle is that whatever is offered to Krishna is prasad. That is the spiritual principle. And the cultural expression of that is, okay, in the Indian tradition, traditional Indian foods are offered to Krishna. So, generally speaking of laddu, peda, halwa, these are things as prasad. Or nothing else, they give you sugar. So, the Lord mercy is sweet, then they make a sweet food as prasad. So, now, step note, like in what are the difference between Hinduism and Krishna consciousness? There are many differences. One difference is that Hindus think that bhakti is a part of life. Vaishnava, Jivri, Harikshan, you will understand life is a part of bhakti. Not only bhakti is life, but life itself, this particular existence, this particular one existence is a part of bhakti, is going on for many, many lifetimes. So like that Hindus think, prasad is one some small food item that we get when we go to a temple. But as devotees understand, everything that we eat is prasad. So our whole food is prasad. But now, the spiritual principle, so Hindus generally think of prasad only in terms of the specific cultural expression. They don't even know the spiritual principle. That everything that we eat should be offered to Krishna and everything should be prasad. So now the spiritual principle can be expressed culturally in different ways. The spiritual principle is that whatever we eat, we should offer it to Krishna. So then, if China, they are living in America, and whatever food they are regularly eating over there, can they not offer that to Krishna and take it? Will that not be prasad? So, prasad as a cultural item in people see it, it's very jarring to say that pizza is prasad. How can it be prasad? But when you understand prasadam as a spiritual principle, then any and every item can be prasad. So even chowmein and cake and all these things can also be prasad. Now, at the same time, although everything, any menu from anywhere can be prasad, but you see, Prabhupada is done. When Prabhupada went to America, he taught even his Western disciples the Indian cuisine. He taught them the Indian items, how to cook. Sometimes Yamuna Mataji would make some Western desserts, donut and this sort of thing. So I'd dabble in it, but I'll teach you how to make some desh and rasgulla and all these things. So now, another important detail is that although we can say that in Indian culture we eat whatever, we eat different food, pakoda and paratha and maybe paratha in Punjab and masala dosa in South India, and it's all cultural expressions, all these things prasad. But now, if you look at the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or if you look at the description of Ananda and Champu, what Krishna likes is spiritual world is different. So, Krishna likes butter and ghee, or butter and ghee, and especially curd, not ghee, but butter, curd, milk.
I mean, he's not saying this is just an Indian act, this is just a local cultural tradition. So this is ritual. So in one sense, that means the some aspects of Indian culture coincide with eternal spiritual truths. So it is not just Indian culture, it is eternal spiritual truths.
So in one prominent temple in Vrindavan, at one time they decided to dress Krishna in a modern way. And you know, they dress Krishna in jeans and t-shirt, and instead of flute they put mobile in their hands. There's such a furor. And eventually that pujari of that particular temple, not as important of course, that he had to give a severe chastisement. So now, we can really change Krishna's paraphernalia in the name of culture. Krishna is culturally different. He can, can you put the violin in Krishna's hands instead of flute? Krishna can play a violin also if he wants. But we have to listen to Krishna the way he is described in scripture. So, just because the culture is different in different places, we cannot change the integral aspects of Krishna's culture. Krishna. We cannot change. So, occasionally, Mayapur, they may dress Radha Madhavan in Chinese or Japanese dress. But normally, they dress them in the traditional dress which is described in the Vedic literature, the Vaishnava, Pali Vaishnava literature. So, the point again I am making now is slightly different. So, prasadam is a particular cultural food, but it is also a spiritual principle. But it is not that spiritual principle also has a cultural form in the spiritual world. So, in general, in the spiritual world, Krishna eats those food items which are described in the literature. So, therefore, we should try to replicate in our lives as much as possible that eternal culture of the spiritual world. That eternal culture of the spiritual world. So, as devotees, you know, we can also eat chowmin. But, you know, we have to think for ourselves when we eat chowmin, do I remember Krishna or do I remember chowmin? So it is for us, certain cultural forms are very commonplace. And therefore, when some new cultural form comes up, now I hope this term is not very abstract. Cultural form is, you know, prasadam is a principle. One cultural form of prasadam is, say, halwa. Another cultural form is, say, chowmin. These are cultural forms. So certain cultural forms are old, familiar to us, certain cultural forms are new to us. Now when we take prasadam in a culturally new form, often what happens is we get caught in the sensory of material life. So ideally speaking, as devotees in India, we should stick to prasadam which is of the traditional cultural form. It is not just traditional, it is actually the original spiritual form, original cultural form that is there in the spiritual world. So unfortunately, you know, actually ideally what should happen is, you know, it's gone, should take Vaishnava culture all over the world. But unfortunately, the Western culture comes to India through its gone. You know, most of us probably never heard of chowmein and other things before coming to its gone. But now, I'm not saying that it is wrong. But that is that this should not become our predominant diet. Now, prasadam, whatever are the traditional forms which are described in our Vaishnava tradition, we aspire to develop those tastes. But if some devotees have some other taste, they can be accommodated. But we should not get too much caught up in that. That is not the current last time. Anyway, any other questions? You would like to comment on this? Gita.
Okay. I think the current group has had a question. The current regarding the Sharam.
So, yes, I concluded that Gita is enough. So Maharaj said that this pizza is for new people. Pizza is not for devotees to eat in the temple. So some congregation devotees asked, Maharaj, they did not ask Maharaj directly, but this discontent was, why is the Govinda so expensive? If you go to Chaupati Govinda, it's more expensive than Dhruva Govinda also.
It's very expensive, Maharaj. Why is this price kept so expensive? Govinda is not for devotees.
Govinda is for new people. Actually, you know, so like South Bombay area is a very, very posh area. Very posh area of Mumbai. And the people over there, it will go to a hotel only if it is on a particular class.
you know, if you go to a person who's a millionaire and you tell him tea costs 1 rupee or 5 rupees, it's below his degree to below degree to pay 5 rupees. He will go to a hotel where the tea will cost you 35 rupees. So, and Govinda's preaching tool to attract people of a particular class. No, so that's why it's made in a particular way and the prices are also a particular class. So, Maharaj said that even when he was every day taking for pizza, the one that he's attached to be, he's attached to keep preaching through pizza. So, pizza is not for devotees. So, Maharaj told Gauranga Prabhu saying that, you know, he said, our kitchen prasadam should be so good that the brahmacharis don't even want to look at Govinda.
So that is next going on Gauranga Prabhu said, it's a lifetime challenge for me. But
that's what Maharaj did. Maharaj said, that is Govinda is for. If they have a certain item, that is for preaching. Now occasionally in the Ash temple and Ash Mountain, certain items will be made. But that should always be occasional.
Prasadam was brought to him in the palace. He was working with his secretary, they were having his massage and bath and speaking his voice. As soon as the prasadam time came, Prabhupada would put everything else aside and just sit down and give his full, complete attention and absorption to honoring the prasadam. The devotees who were with him would just quietly go away. And Prabhupada would fully absorb himself and honor the prasadam. And I think this is a move that we should very much benefit from trying to emulate and follow the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada in honoring prasadam. If we fully absorb in honoring prasadam physically, we'll be able to digest better, the body should be healthier, it'll be a conducive environment for cultivating spiritual life. And one can fully absorb oneself in Krishna consciousness through honoring prasadam, thinking that this prasadam that I'm tasting now was tasted before by Krishna, and Krishna's saliva is mixed in with the Mahaprasadam, and one can be tasted in Krishna's presence in this way. And one can make tremendous advancement in Krishna consciousness, remembering Krishna while honoring prasadam. Just like when we chant japa in the morning, hey Krishna, 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 hey, hey, hey Ram, 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 hey, hey. When we're attentive and chanting nicely, then we feel more motivated to serve Krishna. And if we're inattentive while chanting, if we're speaking with other devotees or thinking about our past, we don't get the same shakti from the chanting. So similarly, if we give our full attention and become absorbed in honoring prasadam, then we'll get so much more benefit from that prasadam. And we can get an even higher taste from this kind of marketing, from the activity of devotional service and honoring prasadam. I see this becoming less and less as the years go by. In this time as I travel around the world, we usually tend to often talk in the prasadam, speak on the cell phones in the prasadam, and do this and so many things. So many times you see the warriors with his hand on the plate, he's putting prasadam in his mouth, and his other hand he has his hand on the cell phone, and he's speaking. And you have one devotee on this side on one cell phone, the devotee in the middle may be listening to some Walkman or player, and before you have that time, he has another cell phone having a completely different conversation. So, Chaturvedashi Bhagavad Prasadam, we want to associate the devotees and honor prasadam together. Just like when we chant japa in the morning, we give certain shakti for the temple. And what about when we're in a kirtan and bhikkhus are chanting and dancing together? Hey Krishna,
hey Krishna, 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 hey, hey, hey Ram, Ram, Ram.
Krishna was very nice and together. Having some very nice experience these past few days with having prasadam here with the nice sound system and the beautiful talk. It's being read Krishna book. You can hear very nicely. I prefer this venue even to downstairs. Because downstairs often there may be some sounds in the kitchen. Very honoring prasadam here, it's quiet. There's a good sound system. Everyone is focused. Very few people are talking during the reading of the Krishna Lila and honoring prasadam. It's very, very nourishing. This is Sankirtan. It's honoring the Krishna prasadam together. So, I also wanted to share a personal realization about overeating or not overeating or the mood of honoring prasadam. Is it for my pleasure? As Pujji asked this question before. We heard the wonderful statement of Narada Maharaj that why I shouldn't eat anything? This body is meant for serving Krishna. Now it's not serving Krishna anymore. Why I should maintain it? Why I should feed it anymore? So the same way we can have a similar cultivating similar consciousness and honoring Krishna. That this body is a machine. It's a facility by which we can utilize to execute our services for Krishna. And by putting prasadam inside the machine, then if we put it in nicely, the machine will function nicely and effectively and therefore enhance and facilitate our service. And if not, if we don't feed it properly, our services will suffer. So we should see the prasadam as a facility to enhance our bodily abilities to serve Krishna. Eating this consciousness. As a Western body person living in India for 19 years, I've had a lot of challenges with prasadam. Too much chili, too much oil, different kinds of sabjis that I never experienced, different kinds of oils, different cooking techniques. And I've had quite a lot of share of indigestion and body. When the stomach breaks down, when there's no digestion, then the energy is not flowing to the body. Then the surface suffers. So you have to be very, very careful. Just eat enough so the body will be strong to serve Krishna. And as we grow older especially, less is always more. Always, it's better to err, make an error a little on the less side than on more side. Prabhupada would say, no one is dying from starvation. No one is dying from under-eating. People are dying from over-eating. So it's better to eat a little bit less and just put it in the system. What am I going to put in the system so the body will function nicely so I can serve Krishna? So, I'd like to ask my question if I can. So, we're discussing the topic of happiness and distress in this world. That why did God make this world so bad? So I wrote a poem and shared it later in the afternoon with the mercy of Krishna. And I posted it on the internet last night to thousands of people. And I got one reply that the person says, no, you know, why do you say the world is bad? The world is so nice. And even if the world is bad, that is only to enhance the pleasures of this world. Argument can be made. Without distress in this world, how can we enjoy happiness? A painter doesn't paint only one color, red. The painter will use at least two colors, contrast. A painter may use many colors. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. How we can enjoy without variety? If there's only happiness and no distress, how can we enjoy? Suffering enhances enjoyment. Even in the Vedic scriptures, we hear about Korma Deva. when the Devas and the Asuras were churning the Mandara mountain, Kaura did serve as a pivot, and he had an itch. An itch is a kind of suffering. And then by the pivot was turning on his back, he was scratching an itch, and he was enjoying it. So even the gods themselves, they're deriving pleasure from suffering. And even the highest 10 canto Srimad Bhagavatam, you see Krishna and the gopis, that out of Vipralamba, they're separated from Krishna, they're suffering. And then we have Sambhoga coming together, union. So even suffering and separation, the suffering of the gopis is considered the highest pleasure. So this world is designed by God for our pleasure, and happiness and suffering are only meant to enhance that pleasure. If we were only happy, life would be boring. There would be no challenges at all.
I think you know the answer to this question already. I'll just briefly describe the answer. So, if you've got three questions, first is that God is suffering is what makes life enjoyable or makes the joys of the world better. And so, God has made it this way so that we can have a balance of everything and we can enjoy. And third, that is also there is a tenth kind of shinta. So, first point is, whether sufferings are necessary to make pleasures more enjoyable. If that is so, then people would voluntarily choose sufferings. And nobody does that. Nobody does that. Take any field, if a cricketer is in form, he's hitting centuries in every cricket match, then he knows, because I'm hitting centuries in every cricket match, I'm not enjoying. So let me get out on a dark. So then in the future when I hit a century, I'll enjoy. Nobody does that. No field anywhere else, somebody chooses suffering so that they can make pleasure enjoy. If that is a desirable, then you choose that. The businessman, if the company is making profits every year, they'll never let me make profit, have lost in this year, so that in the future year I can enjoy. So first of all, they recognize that this is not a desirable thing. If it were desirable, then we would choose it. It is not a desirable situation, rather, it is a forced situation, and we try to rationalize and justify it by saying that pleasure also enhances, suffering also enhances pleasure. So, that is the first one. Whoever chooses it. So, it's not desirable. Second point is, has God made this world like different colors in our canvas, so that like there are different experiences. Generally, most religions are at karmakanda level. At the karmakanda level, God's role is what? Punisher and rewarder. Primarily, we want to see God as a rewarder. We also recognize that God is a punisher. And at this understanding, and mostly, although Christianity talks about love of God, it is mostly at this level of religion. At a level where material prosperity is seen as the mercy of God. But this is one of the arguments Christians give to poor Hindus to say that our God is the true God and our religion is the true religion. See, you people are worshipping so much to worship your God and still he has kept you in poverty. So we Christians, our God is the true God, we worship him, protect us, and provide for us. So material prosperity at a mundane level of religion is seen as a sign of mercy of God. But this is a very preliminary understanding of God. Is it that God has created this world with both these things, misery and pleasure, to balance them out? If you look at the scriptures at the highest level, see the scriptures have come up with many, many elaborate explanations of the problem of evil. Because they don't accept karma and reincarnation. I think we discussed earlier also. Why is one child born a cripple? So that his parents can learn the virtue of selfless service. Now, is that true? Okay, you can say that God wanted to teach his parents the child the virtue of selfless service.
but to teach them the virtue of selfless service, why does God have to make their child a cripple? I mean, the child is going through needless suffering. No, the child has to learn the virtue of tolerance and patience. But then why that child? Do other children not need to learn the virtue of patience and tolerance? So see, it is difficult situation can indeed teach us virtues. But it is quite perverse to say that those difficult situations are created by God just to teach us those virtues. The difficult situations are a result of our own misdeeds. The difficult situation, and if we respond properly to those difficult situations, we will learn virtues. See, at least you know there is some situation which has an effect. We can't call the effect as the cause of the situation. Is this point clear? In a certain difficult situation, can teach us some virtue. But those virtues are the effects of the situation. We can't reverse the process and say that those effects are the cause of the situation. That will make God very perverse. You know, if you want to say that God has made a person a cripple so that his parents can learn the value of selfless service, then can't we say that everybody needs to learn selfless service and all children should be born crippled? Is it that the children, the parents whose children are crippled, they are already selfless? Or that they don't need to learn selflessness? Now these explanations can be useful, but they have to be additional to the foundational explanation that our suffering is because of our grandmother. Now this is again positive thinking. Positive thinking is, yes, I can learn selfless service. But positive thinking is not based on false perception. Actually, I have to. I must have done some bad karma, and God must have done some, and this, my child must have done bad karma because of which I have this situation. But you recognize that. So, this is a very incomplete understanding to say that God has created the suffering in our life. That is one thing I wanted to say. That, you know, I don't know whether we can say that again, God has made this world so bad. Rather, we can put it, why is this world so bad? To say that God has made this world so bad is a little too strong. You know, we cannot put the blame on God directly. This world is dukkhalam shashvatam, but that dukkhalam shashvatam is because of our choices. We can't say that God has made this world. That would be thing. That's why, you know, in the Vedic culture there is a separation between Maya and Krishna. This world is bad, and that world's badness is because of Maya. So now, if you see, separation is very important for us to have a devotional attitude towards Krishna. Because in the Western religions, they don't have a separation between Maya and Krishna. So, what happens is, like there's this Jewish rabbi who wrote that book, why when bad things happen to good people. So, he's telling one story. You know, in the Jewish tradition, they have to fast on the day of Sabbath. Because on holy day, they have to fast completely. And on that particular day, one family did not fast. And 1 week after that, the daughter of the family died in a car accident. And these parents started thinking that because we did not fast on that day, God punished us by taking away our daughter. And now, on one side there is so much resentment that why has God taken such a severe price? But along with that resentment there is a fear. You know, if we express resentment, God will do something more bad to us. So you know, if we see that the sufferings of this life as directly coming from God, it can create a very negative conception towards God. Now yes, now Prabhupada also says, a devotee should say, Krishna has come as a suffering. But that is, it is not that Krishna has caused that suffering. Suffering is caused by my karma only. But Krishna is giving me the opportunity to become purified from this suffering. So in the Vedic culture there is this clear separation between Krishna and Maya. So, you know, if somebody dies suddenly, then, you see, to understand that Maya is so cruel. Maya is merciless. If we just go in one towards one temptation, I will grab us away. So now, if we say that, when Mother Sita went in, definitely grab of Lakshmana Deva, Ravana completely grabbed. Now who grabbed? It was Ravana. Now we can say Lord Rama is the Supreme Lord, and because Lord Rama sanctioned only, so Ravana kidnapped Mother Sita. So we don't say Lord Rama is merciless. So Ravana is merciless. You can say that Sita is such a small mistake. She actually wanted to do charity to a sadhu. What is the mistake? But the point is, there is a separation between Krishna and Maya, very clear. The sufferings of this world are due to Maya. The Buddha has a system where actions produce reactions. And the reactions Maya gives in a dispassionate way. Whatever is there, she will give the reactions. Now Krishna is there, let's understand, Krishna is not up there causing our suffering. Krishna is in here helping us to face the suffering. The presence of Krishna is a Paramatma, the presence of Krishna is holy in his heart. Krishna is not up there causing suffering to us. Krishna is in here with us, helping us stay with us. So, this point is very important to understand that God has not created the patterns of this world. That's why very interesting. Chaturvarnya Maya Krishnam Gunakarma Vibhagasha Sasya Tartaram Apima Vidya Tartaram Apima. Now, I have created Chaturvarnya, but still I am not the doer. He said, I am not the doer in this world. That I am not choosing who will go in this world. It is the soul by the action is choosing, okay, I want to be a Brahman, I want to be Kshatriya. So Krishna has created the world for what it is. That the sufferings that come in this world, they are not imposed by Krishna. They are actually by our own misdeeds. They are actually our own misdeeds. That is the second point. Answer the second question about God. So we cannot really say God is causing our suffering. God has made this world bad. Because we by our choices have chosen to live in this bad world. And we are making this bad world worse. As far as the third question is concerned about the gopis, Sambhog and Vipralamba, that is at a transcendental level. See, even Radharani says that once, although we say Radharani is suffering because of viraha from Krishna, because of separation from Krishna, there is one prayer in the Rupa Goswami Padyavali, where he says, Radharani is saying to Krishna, Krishna, I prefer separation from you. Rather than union, I prefer separation from you as compared to union with you. Why? Because in union, I can see only one place. In separation, I can see you everywhere. Sabra Krishna Mayajana. I can see you everywhere. So now, what does this mean? Actually, in separation and in union, there is deep remembrance of Krishna. And that remembrance of Krishna is itself a source of great happiness. Whereas in this material world, when there is misery or there is joy, both of them are based in the foundation of forgetfulness of Krishna. As the Prabhupada said in Mantra quote, the conditioned soul in the material world is suffering material pleasures and pain. It is beautiful, suffering material pleasures and pain. Why material pleasure and pain? Pleasure may be pleasant, pain will be painful. But the foundation, the substratum is itself painful because the soul is surviving. So in spiritual life, in the spiritual realm, Goloka Vrindavan, the devotee will be separated from Krishna and that will be suffering. But that suffering is founded in deep remembrance of Krishna. And remembrance of Krishna is also a joy. That's why it's not that as devotees when we worship, as a gopi feeling of separation from Krishna, we are some sort of sadist or masochist who delight in the suffering of others or who consider suffering as a great virtue. No, we understand that actually a suffering is also an ecstasy because in that there is intense remembrance of Krishna. That's why that separation and union cannot be compared with the enjoyment and misery of this world.
I think we really got yoga rest today. Totally yoga rest. But we discussed some very important things. So we have, our plan was to have a 2.5 hour class. At least we will complete this purpose. Yeah. But many of the things which are supposed to be discussed in 14-15 minutes, we have discussed.
The path of Vijna, or the answer that she would have was for such gratification. The path of repeated birth and death actually exists spiritually. The living entity has no birth and death. Birth and death apply to the outward covering of the spirit, soul, the body. Death is compared to the taking off and birth to the putting on of outward garments. Foolish human beings who are grossly absorbed in the culture of avidya, nescience, do not find this cruel process.
See, let's see this contrast. So since this is just death and birth, I just like putting on and removing garments. Now this is a very casual activity. Prabhupada immediately followed everybody,
this cruel process.
So yes, you can say that it's like putting on a dress and removing your dress, but actually for one who's going through it, she is attached to it. It's not as casual as putting on a dress and taking off a dress. One emotionally entirely suffers.
Yeah. Enamored with the beauty of the illusory energy, they undergo the same miseries repeatedly and do not learn any lessons from the law of emotion.
So now this paragraph is up to the point that sense gratification causes mortality, causes us to produce natural mortality. Therefore now, we have to learn vidya.
Therefore, the culture of vidya, or transcendental knowledge, is essential to the human being. Sense enjoyment in a diseased material condition must be restricted as far as possible. Unrestricted sense enjoyment in this bodily condition is a path of ignorance and death. Great entities are not without spiritual senses. Every living being in his original spiritual form has all the senses which are not materially manifested, being covered by the material body and mind. The activities of the material senses are perverted reflections of the activities of the original spiritual senses. In his diseased condition, the spirit soul engages in material activities under the material body.
You see, the analogy is very helpful for us to objectively understand our situation. Prabhupada says in first Canto purport that enjoyment in a diseased condition, it does two things. It aggravates the suffering and prolongs the duration of the suffering. So like that, in our conditioned state, if we try to enjoy the senses, we prolong our mental existence and we aggravate our suffering also because of karmic reactions.
Yeah. Real sense enjoyment is possible only when the disease of material world is removed. In our pure spiritual form, free from all material contamination, real enjoyment of the senses is possible. A patient must regain his health before he can truly enjoy sense pleasure again. Thus, the aim of human life should not be to enjoy perverted sense enjoyment, but to cure the material disease.
It's not that we are permanently stopped from enjoyment, but temporarily stopped from enjoyment so that we can enjoy the true being. If we have this particular goal in mind, some people who practice celibacy or practice self-control, without understanding spiritual purpose, we can bring this torture for them. But see, one of the things that we have in the hospital is we are very clear. The hospital is a temporary place. They are admitted in the hospital. I'm here for a few days. I may not get the food that I want. I may have to do some investigation, injection, surgery. But we are ready to already talk because we know soon I'm going to go back home. So like that, a life in the hospital is inconvenient. But if you remember this is the analogy, and this is, I have to do whatever hospital is required as part of the treatment, but soon I will be out.
Yeah. Aggravation of the material disease is no sign of knowledge, but a sign of avidya, ignorance. For good health, a person should not increase his fever from 105 degrees to 107 degrees, but should reduce his temperature to the normal 98.6. That should be the aim of human life. The modern trend of material civilization is to increase the temperature of the feverish material condition, which has reached the point of 107 degrees in the form of atomic energy.
So I love when Prabhupada is so beautifully written, yeah.
Meanwhile, the foolish politicians are crying that at any moment the world may go to hell. That is the result.
Well, they go to hell, especially in 1960s, there was a lot of fear of nuclear warfare, and they would have big processions that nuclear weapons should be banned, and in nuclear war there are no winners, and they would have sort of, you know, just a pile of skulls being shown, and there was a lot of fear over there. But now what has happened, they have got used to it. They have understood that nuclear weapons are not going to go off, they are going to be there anyway.
That is the result of the advancement of material knowledge and neglect of the most important part of life, the culture of spiritual knowledge. Sri Isha Upanishad.
According to surveys, the amount of violent deaths, either because of wars or because of murders, that happened in the 20th century are 7 times more the number of violent deaths that happened throughout the 19th century. throughout the early 19th century from one to the other. And this is that is in earlier times wars were much more. Now I think the country's borderlines are fixed. But earlier, you know, every king would come and you try to expand his borders. But what has happened? See, the world is always in a crisis. But because of technological advancement, the crisis in one part is not limited to one part. It can influence the whole world. And that's why what Prabhupada is saying is that we have worsened the material condition. In trying to improve it, we are actually aggravating it. Yeah.
Sri Yusha Panishad here warns that we must not follow this dangerous path leading to death. On the contrary, we must develop a personal spiritual knowledge so that we may become completely free from the cruel hands of death.
Now, if you remember that earlier PowerPoint where Vidya and Avidya had different meanings in different verses. So in this verse, what is the meaning of Avidya? Avidya means how to live peacefully in the material world. How to live, navigate life in the material world. But till now, the Prabhupada is using the word Avidya.
He is using it.
Till now the Prabhupada is using the word Avidya, he is using it in other sense. Yeah. So till now the Prabhupada is using the word Avidya, he is using it in sense, the sense of the previous word. The pursuit of sense gratification, whether it is knowledge or without knowledge. But now Prabhupada has changed. And now we talk about Avidya in the sense of knowledge for bodily maintenance. Go ahead.
This does not mean that all activities for the maintenance of the body should be stopped. There is no question of stopping activities, just as there is no question of wiping out one's temperature altogether and trying to recover from a disease. To make the
power of analogy. You know this, if you have an analogy which has multiple correlations with the concept, then it becomes very powerful. So the Prabhupada says you don't increase the temperature. So and then you understand the temperature, you die. So like that the world has come on, the world has done destruction by nuclear weapons. That's another addition correlation. Now that is one more correlation is that we don't make the temperature zero. We have to make the temperature the normal. So like that, but material activities we don't have to feverishly increase them, nor do we have to make them zero. We have to reduce it.
To make the best use of a bad bargain is the appropriate expression. The culture of spiritual knowledge necessitates the help of the body and mind. Therefore, maintenance of the body and mind is required if we are to reach our goal. The normal temperature should be maintained at 98.6 degrees, and the great sages and saints of India have attempted to do this by a balanced program of spiritual and material knowledge. We never allow the misuse of human intelligence for disease and sense gratification.
That's very interesting. Prabhupada is not saying the very scriptures of India tell us how to balance. It's the sages and saints of India tell us how to balance. Why? Because the scriptures give eternal principles. The sages and saints tell us how to apply this. Because scriptures, what they tell us in one sense is very important. Scriptures are omniform. It's like you have omnipotent, God has all power. Like that, scriptures are omniform. Omniform means there are all levels of instruction. So, which of the scriptures' instructions is applied now, that is the system. And accordingly, they teach us. You know, as I said yesterday, you know, there are differences in instruction of Bhakti Thakur, when you do one preaching, in a public ceremony, he took out his cigarette head and set it on fire. Burned it. He said, Vaishnavism has got nothing to do with this oppressive caste. And Bhaktivedanta Swami introduced the Brahmin diction. And he gave the threat. Or he did something contrary to his father and grandfather's master. No. According to time, he has been. So can you imagine, cigarettes were publicly burned.
Bhakti Thakur was not already in the gentile, to be Vaishnavam. So very bold.
He did that because he wanted to show the Krishna in his chanting.
Because the condition is the very culture of the operative class.
So still the things tell us how to apply in our current situation.
So you know, that's how we have got our voices. It is not exactly ideal guruful,
but it's a best guruful that you can have current situation. The same reason and same the heart and you have told us. How has students figure out the practice of Krishna Bhakti?
That's why Sambandha Jnana is eternal. But Abhidhaya is especially told by the current Acharyas.
And that's why some devotees who go to Gaudiya Math and other places, they read a lot of people with Acharya's books. And they say, oh, I know what this Acharya said, I know what this Acharya said. It's all very good. But you know, generally from the previous Acharya, you will not get much of pain. And even if you get it, it's very irrelevant for us. That's why we have to hear from devotees of our generation, from our organization, who are actually practicing in our life. And that's why Prabhupada is not talking about Sambandha. He's saying the same and same thing. How we can balance? That Abhidhaya is always given by the current Acharya.
Go ahead.
Human activities diseased by a tendency towards sense gratification have been regulated in Vedas under the principles of salvation. This system employs religion, economic development, sense gratification, and salvation. But at the present moment, people have no interest in religion or salvation.
Vedas are earlier, no dharma and no moksha, only up and down. It's unsustainable.
They have only one aim in life. Sense gratification, and in order to achieve this end, they make plans for economic development. Misguided men think that religion should be maintained because it contributes to economic development, which is required for sense gratification. Thus, in order to guarantee further sense gratification after death, in heaven, there is some system of religious observance. But this is not the purpose of religion. The path of religion is actually meant for self-realization. And economic development is required just to maintain the body in a sound, healthy condition. A man should lead a healthy life with a sound mind just to realize vidya, true knowledge, which is the aim of human life. This life is not meant for working like an ass, or cultural avidya, or sense gratification.
Prabhupada is quickly moving forward. First you talk about avidya, then you talk about aparadhan. Aparadhan is dharmatakam. Prabhupada quickly rejecting that, he is going to paradhan.
Let's show you what is happening in the purport.
Between needs in spiritual advances to paradharma, aparadharma. Okay, so let's regulate the temptation. But then immediately Prabhupada goes next to him. If you want to, the aparadharma cannot give us immortality. If you want immortality, you have to go to paradharma. So he just want to talk about paradharma. And he comes to Srimad Bhagavatam. This is presented in Srimad Bhagavatam. Who would like to be?
The path of Vidya is most important in Srimad Bhagavatam, which directs a human being to utilize his life to inquire into the absolute truth. The absolute truth is
the life. So, which book does the Prabhupada refer to in the Vishwavidyan? Nectar of Emotion, Bhagavad Gita, and Bhagavatam. So, this is the Upanishad is in the Shruti. So, the direction they want people to the Bhakti scriptures. So this science of Karma Yoga is, can be learned, is the art of offering our work to Krishna, to God, can be learned in Bhakti Dhamma Sindhu. And this science of Karma, Karma, Vikarma is told more in the Bhagavad Gita. The Prabhupada is gently leading you to come to these books. Go ahead.
The absolute truth is realized step by step as Brahman, Paramatma and finally Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. The absolute truth is realized by the broad-minded man who has attained knowledge and attachment according to the 18th principles of Bhagavad Gita, described in the purport to Master Atene. The central purpose of these 18 principles is to entertainment of transcendental devotional service to the personality of Godhead. Therefore, all classes of men are encouraged to learn the art of devotional service to the Lord.
First and now, Prabhupada is going to explicitly talk about devotional service. Strategy is going to talk about karma yoga, talk about bringing God in, conservation. Now, explicit worship from the heart of the Mata. Tasma, they came in, direct bhakti worship. First time the Bhagavad, first time the Shukcha.
The directed path to the aim of Vidya is described by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasa Amrita book, which we have presented in English as the Nectar of Devotion. The culture of Vidya is summarized in Srila Bhagavatam, 1st chapter, 2nd chapter, 14th verse, in the following words. Tasma ekena manasa bhagavan sarvadham bhavim shrotavya kirti sarveshwar dheya punjasya nityada.
Therefore, the brilliant of the culture of Vidya. Swami is Mayavadi, so the important thing about that is sit and do dhyan and contemplate, naiti. Actually, the naiti process is called as a process of merciless analysis. Merciless analysis. Whatever comes out, analyze it. Naiti. But actually, that merciless analysis completely drives up the heart. So ultimately, you don't have mercy on your own heart, but you say, naiti, all these emotions are the fault. You don't have mercy on the absolute truth, that is also an illusion. You don't have mercy on bhakti also, because bhakti is also an illusion. Then all that you get is a big nothing. Although they call it one, that one is as good as nothing, or as bad as nothing. So their merciless analysis completely dries up their heart. So, Prabhupada says, Vidya is actually the Shota Uya Kirti Tavish. That is the Papa Vidya.
Therefore, with unpointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember and worship the personality of Godhead, who is protector of the devotees. Unless religion, economic development and sense gratification aim towards the attainment of devotional service to the Lord, they are all simply different forms of mesmerism, as Sri Ishopanishad indicates in the following mantra.
Thank you very much. Shri Shobhishati, Kumpa, Jitin, Gaurav.